Is that a... You silly sod!
Welcome to NC Gum Bunnies, episode 21. This is Will.
This is Keith.
All right.
Seems like we just did this.
Yeah, it seems like we did just do this. It was a little bit ago, right? It was, when did we do this? We did this on Saturday? Friday. Okay. All right. So, more events, news, and stuff coming up. Today, we are dealing with the coverage at the most recent Mace Invitational.
Yep.
We just had Unexpected Allies.
Yeah. That was a lot of fun, by the way.
Which one of us played at.
Yeah. I mean.
And you drank and left.
Yeah, that seemed like a good plan.
It seemed like a good plan. I played two rounds and then was delegated to all the different things I had to do that day. So, yeah. Let's see here. We have a bunch of schedule coming for us, ahead of us here. Also.
Yeah, I'm looking at that list from across the table, man. That thing's, like, gigantic.
Oh, yeah. So, follow us.
Yeah.
On Twitter.
Yeah.
Like us.
On Facebook.
On Facebook. Our Twitter is The Gum Bunnies. That's where you can follow us at. When I tried to go on Twitter yesterday, there were some problems. There's a malfunction or something like that. It was saying, thank you for selling us that our stuff is down. It showed a broken little robot. but yeah. So yeah. Hoping to get some feedback from there. Eventually I'll post something on the Facebook.
Yeah, you have plenty of things to post, lazy.
Uh-huh. Okay. So, let's see. We'll go ahead and start the Gazette.
What's our Facebook page again?
Our Facebook page is Gum Bunnies Podcast. All right. Roll a Gazette.
Yep, sounds good.
All right. You're a little dead this morning.
Yeah, well, I just woke up.
It's the end of
my
day.
I woke up too. Well, his light's on. That's what woke me up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You guys are exceptionally loud when you walk in.
Good. I'm glad we wake you up. If you didn't wake me up, then we wouldn't be doing this news right now. I would have gone straight to bed. I just wanted him to see the new Epic Rap Battle.
Well, it was good.
Yeah, it was. All right. So, June 21st at Hobby Invasion, there is a 50-point steamroller.
Oh,
it's going to be for those who are not going to StormCon.
That should be a lot of fun. I mean, it's 50 points. Either that brings a lot of people in.
Yep, it does. It does. If I have everything straight with car and stuff like that, I'm planning on actually being there.
Oh, okay, sweet.
All right, so June 28th through 29th at Cape Fear Games in Wilmington, North Carolina, is Privateer Press Weekend. They're going to have a steamroller, some Death Race, some different Privateer Press games like High Command, things like that going on there, some demos.
Yeah.
Seems like a lot of fun.
Oh, I saw the other day you got a... You get the last installment of the booster for High Command for you, which reminds me for the Horde side.
Yeah, you got
to. I need to get my last one.
Yeah, you need to catch up on the War Machine side there.
Yep, I do enjoy some High Command.
I enjoy it too. I'm waiting for more sets to come out because I'm looking forward to like the
a little more customization.
I'm looking forward to more sets. I mean, the next sets that are coming out for War Machine is the more places and events,
mm-hmm.
and then they're going to have that for Hordes, and I'm kind of looking forward to that. All right, so July 1st is the start of the Journeyman League at Gimber's Armory.
Oh, okay.
To play on Tuesday, stuff like that.
Oh, I can get punched in the face by Barnabas again.
I don't know why you'd play Signar again.
Oh, okay, yeah, I should buy Merc. A Merc.
Buy Merc. That's funny. I mean, you could play Circle then.
I mean, I can play your Circle maybe.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Yeah, it wouldn't be the worst, I guess.
It wouldn't be the worst. I'm waiting for my Legion to come back to me because I almost have all my Legion back that isn't Trooper models. Well, like you play Trooper models and Legion.
Well, you do. You play Kallus.
I do play Kallus. Although I am itching to get some of the Legion back on the table because looking at some of the models posted and stuff like that. I'm really happy at the paint job, and I want to get them on the table because they're painted.
Yeah, and you don't want to play by the rules? I gotcha.
Yeah, I'm tired of playing by the rules. Like, I'm tired. Like, you look over and like, okay, I don't want to play by the rules. It seems like I could play some Legion.
Seems like a lot of work to play by the rules.
Well, also getting work out of beasts. Like, that's the goal, learning how to get work out of beasts.
Then play Scorn.
That is not the faction to learn to get work out of beasts. That is the faction that beats me in the head that tells me I can't get work out of my beasts. Not that they're not good at it, but that I'm not good at getting the work out of them. All right, so July 19th is Atomic Empire Qualifier. 50-pointer, steamroller, nothing special except the free admission.
No, that's pretty special, I think.
Yep, free admission. It's going to be pretty good. I'm looking forward to that. July 26th at Cape Fear Games, they're having their 50-point qualifier in Wilmington, three-list event.
That sounds like a lot of fun. I do like three lists. It's a very interesting format, you know, having to spread everything out. Having to spread out all my merc solos over three lists is an interesting challenge.
An interesting challenge, yeah. All your merc solos there. Yeah, how's Striker 3 coming along?
Slowly but surely.
Slowly but surely.
And no, the answer to all Signar problems is add more mercs.
Or Haley.
Or Haley.
All right. We'll go straight into events. All right. So, four events this weekend, June 20th through 22nd, in Charleston, South Carolina, is StormCon.
Well, I'm on my... I was actually kind of concerned about getting this podcast out because of StormCon. So, I mean, we got to get this thing rolling. But, yeah, heading off to StormCon on Friday. Looks like it'll be me, Dave, and Liam on our way up there. And we should hopefully be recording on the way up there and on the way back from there. So
you gonna clear the machine this time?
Maybe.
Maybe.
Might record. I mean.
Might.
Yeah, depending on how full it already is before I get started.
Oh, my gosh. And the thing that got me most about that was I had the extra card that I told you about, too, that's empty.
Oh, that's messed up. I didn't realize you had it with you.
I told you I had it with me. It was my Chromebook.
Oh, yeah, but I thought you were using it for your Chromebook.
It's just space, dude.
Yeah, that's fair.
It can move.
Space doesn't move. You move through space. That's the way it works.
All right. June 27th through 29th is Con Temporal in Raleigh, North Carolina. Please come to this event. Make me not angry. I'm so worried right now that we won't get 8 people for this tournament that's happening. It's 35 points.
It's close, people.
It's close. Please come. I know it's like $60 to get in to play a tournament. I understand that. There's burlesque there. That's all I'm saying.
I didn't realize there was burlesque there.
There is. Oh. There are cabaret, burlesque. There's some stuff like that there. Hmm. I mean, come on. Like, War Machine and... Yeah. Come on.
Oh, well, that's great. See, I can cuddle with Joe while we watch some burlesque. It'll be good.
Yeah, I already said to Em that if the tournament doesn't make it, I'm just going to give her my badge.
Oh, yeah. She'd like that.
All right. So, yeah, that's a 35-pointer qualifier for Mace that's happening at Con Temporal. All right. Oh, yeah, and it's also hardcore time limits on 35 points.
Oh, yeah. Be super. It'll be like Speed Machine.
It will be like Speed Machine. It'll be pretty freaking quick. So, GigaCon, July 4th through 6th in Marietta, Georgia.
Oh, yeah. Definitely looking forward to this. Looking forward to seeing all of our far away War Machine friends.
Yep.
Hopefully we'll see, hopefully Rinth will be there. You know, Brian White obviously lives there. With any luck, Mike Preer,
And all those guys from Atlanta, actually.
Yeah, all those guys.
Those guys are sweet.
Those guys are sweet. I mean, they'd be hard pressed not to show up. I mean, it's in their front yard.
I know, in their front yard. Maybe some people from Florida will come up. I mean, because some people from Atlanta went down to Florida.
That's true.
I mean, I know it's worse. It's harder leaving Florida than it is going in. Yeah. I understand that.
Well, it's the summertime, though.
Yeah, so now it's really hot. Come on up where it's a little bit cooler. Not really, but come on.
Not a lot cooler.
Not a lot cooler at all. Maybe, yeah.
Atlanta's a cool place, too. City of Rhodes and all that other jazz. A lot of cool things to see. So,
And hopefully we'll get to meet a whole bunch of new people, too.
Yep, absolutely.
All right, so July 12th through 13th is the American Team Championship in East Ridge, Tennessee.
Like I said, I'm pretty sure Andy, Liam, and
Chris
are going to that, which is pretty fantastic. I don't know if I don't know what teams are signed up to go to that, but I know that it filled up last year, so it should be
filling up this year.
Yeah. So if it hasn't already,
and you were thinking about carpooling up there with them just to do some coverage.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. It should be really good because there'll be a lot of games going on there. So.
Yep. All right. And August 28th through 31st in Arlington, Virginia is the Nova Open, which is a War Machine weekend qualifier. So is GigaCon, mind you. So that's two right near us.
Yeah. The thing about Nova, though, is a lot of people come down from the Northeast Corridor to come play for that. So, like, last year they had the New Jersey SOBs and met a couple people from...
I'm sure the Dark Omen guys may be down, too.
Probably. From Philly, you know, just a whole bunch of people from all those more northern states. I'm sure there's people from Connecticut and the New England states. So, I mean, it's Washington, D.C. You know, hop on the hop on Amtrak, take a trip down to D.C. You know, you don't have to worry about, you know, people checking your bags 50 times and slamming things around. I mean, it's pretty convenient.
Yeah, that's what scares me most about air travel.
Yeah, I know. Breaking all your models.
Yeah, I know. I'll just have to buy all my models and have them sent to a location at the place where I'm going.
Buy all your models? Just FedEx them to yourself.
<I know.
laughs>
Just FedEx them to myself on the other side. It seems like it'd be safer. Just FedEx the whole bag.
You know. As opposed to just going to the store that you're in. Okay, this is my list. I need to buy all these models and then just straight assemble them on the spot.
Exactly. Like buy from Jay and just be like, hey, yeah, and just get him to send to a certain address and just be like, show up at the address. All right, I got all my models and let's
some assembly required.
Some assembly required. Let's put them all together.
Wouldn't it be the worst for Legion? At least you'd only have to buy like 8 models.
It's true. Like 8 models. It is true.
Yeah.
And 2 of those are casters.
I know. That's what I was thinking.
It's not like traveling with Crix.
Yeah. Or Mercnar.
Which Crix is like the biggest nightmare to travel with.
Yeah. Which is kind of surprising why there's so many Crix players that travel.
Well, Crix already demands your soul, so.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, once you've given that up, you know, everything else is sure to follow.
Yeah, everything else. So, that's the events that are coming up.
Yep. I don't think there's been any spoilers or anything like that, has there?
No.
The last 2 days?
Mm-mm. There haven't been any spoilers over the last 2 days. I'm waiting to hear because since they posted the image, more about Epic Abyssalonia.
Oh, yeah.
Because all we know about her is that she has conferred rage.
What exactly does that do? Do you know?
Conferred Rage is the ability on Epic Butcher that allows him to make it so his battle group charges and power attacks for free. It also, if he kills a model, his battle group gets +2 speed and +2 mat.
Hmm. That's really good, especially for Legion beasts.
Yeah, we've known that for a little bit, and that's all that we know. Yeah. But since they posted her picture, she's going to be out pretty soon. So I'm hoping we'll find out more before she's out.
Well, I mean, you know, Privateer's all about some spoilers, so, you know.
Well, they were at least a little bit better at Lock and Load about not spoiling a whole bunch of exigents.
Well, they've spoiled almost pretty much the entire last book before it came out.
I think they're trying to move away from that, actually, because they got a pretty bad reception for that.
Oh, did they?
And I'd be happy about that, because I'd love to have another book where they surprised us like they did in Wrath.
Yeah.
Because Wrath, we knew some of the stuff coming out, but we really didn't know everything.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be nice to just get that kind of feeling again of being like, oh, I'm so surprised I got this, and being so happy for it and things of that nature.
Yeah.
Although with Abyssalonia coming out soon, probably coming out before Exigence, I'd like to know a little bit about her.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, her fluff just says that, you know, she mutates her beasts as opposed to herself, so what if she had warping for her battle group? That'd be cool.
Yep.
Giving a flight reach or +2 strength to things in her battle group.
It'll be reach, probably.
No, those are three different warps.
Oh, okay, gotcha. I see what you're saying. Oh, yeah, that'd be, yeah. Like, you mean like the stalkers and the ferals and things like that?
Mm-hmm. Because she had it on herself where you could spend a fury and do that. And maybe, like, Blightbringer feet. What?
I warp for Blightbringer.
No, not warp for Blightbringer. That's Blightbringer feet. Like, just have it to where, you know, you can't be allocated focus or...
spend fury.
Or, generate fury in her control area. That'd be nice.
I don't know about that.
What do you mean?
I mean, it'd be not... War Machine doesn't care because they don't hardly spend focus on their jacks anyways.
That's true.
For the Horde side, they definitely spend their furies, so...
It's true. Well, it keeps your heavies alive for an extra turn is what it would end up doing.
That's true.
But yeah, so that's all we got.
All right. This is the Gazette signing out.
Gazette signing out.
So anyways, we're here to talk about the Mace Invitational qualifier that happened this past weekend.
At Gamers Armory.
At Gamers Armory. What was it, like 19 people?
19 people. One dropped after the first round, so it went down to 18. And we had some scattered drops along the way.
Wow, one drop in first round and Clint wasn't even there.
No, we had Clint.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, you saw Clint?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we
he was missing you all. He was wondering where you all went to.
No.
Yeah. While Keith was hanging out there up with Clint while I was actually doing work.
Yeah. That's the way it's supposed to be.
Apparently. That sounds pretty much how this podcast seems to operate.
Yeah. It's very insulting. I mean, he edits.
I do a lot of work.
He does a lot of work.
I know he does the work. I wouldn't pick on him otherwise. That's okay. No fun then.
Exactly.
We were talking to Per Year up there and stuff like that too. He wasn't up there, but we were communicating via phone.
Yeah.
And communing via beer.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I sent text to one of y'all. I can't remember who I sent a text to on the way and asked how it went. I think it was you, Keith.
I think so.
It was pretty much one word responses of yes, okay, fine.
Sorry about that. I was just...
Ned?
Yeah.
That's understandable.
And trying to get us lost that day back?
Yes.
Trying really hard. Okay. So, what did you play, Andy?
The Thagrush 2... I'm learning how to play Thagros 2, so I just blatantly copied somebody else's. It was Thags 2 with an Angel, two Scythians, a Seraph, a Naga Nightlurker, two Forsaken, and a Shepherd, and I think that was it.
Anything in the Specialist bag?
In the Specialist bag, I had an Afflictor. Oh, no, there was a Rake in the main list, too. The Specialist bag had an Afflictor, a Spell Martyr, a Shepherd, two Strider Deathstalkers, and I think that was it.
That's not a bad bag.
Now, essentially the idea being that if the Naga isn't needed, you just take out the Naga for other stuff, whatever is the most applicable in that situation. So that usually ended up being the Naga goes out and an Afflictor and a Shepherd come in. So that worked well.
I was a little...
It's a melee beater list. It's what I want to use to play against Trolls and Signar in a three list format. So I was trying to give it a real stress test here, which did fantastically at.
You need something other than Veil 2 to play against Signar?
Well, Signar can play against Veil 2. It's scary. I need something that's overwhelmingly in my favor. So.
Oh, wow. You and Will obviously deserve each other.
Look, we're talking
about... I mean, that may be true. I've been talking about Signar lists, so...
Look, we're talking about Legion. If they don't feel like they're 80% chance to win, they don't feel like they're going into the game right.
Yeah.
Mainly, so true. My main issue in life is Runes of War. And so this list is designed to fight against the inevitable Runes of War and, in some cases, Meat Mountain, because that's definitely going to show up and is a solid way to fight Legion.
So, Brian, you know, you've got this guy afraid of all this Runes of War you've been dropping against him.
Actually, if you don't want to, I did want to ask Andy something really quick.
Sure.
And that was, spoiler alert, me and Andy had a game. I was wondering why you had the Seraph in there. That was actually the surprise on the list to me.
So the Seraph is, I have a limited number of attacks. So the Seraph provides two very key features in there. The list was also copied, but I actually do like the inclusion of the Seraph, and I'm going to keep it. It provides a ranged attack that I can use to clear vital models that are in a charge lane. I can also use the Rake to do that to an extent. But the ranged attack is valuable, and the 2 inches of threat is way, way, way strong on Scythians. And on a double Scythian list, a Seraph is always something you might want to consider including.
And theoretically, if I get this right, you could also use Slipstream on Thags himself, too, if you wanted to, in order to...
Well, yeah. So that gives Thagrush 12 inches of threat, and he will kill pretty much whatever he connects with.
I was actually meaning Thags could move the other Scythian, too, if you really wanted him to.
Yeah, which is risky. That puts you down at 1, assuming you didn't give yourself an Animus or something like that. And now on a large base caster, being on 1 transfer is... You have to be sure there are no threats against you, which is why I like it against trolls, because trolls is one of the ways you can really guarantee you're not going to get attacked, except for possibly against Roots of War, but that's a whole different story.
I see how you're assuming that you're going to be casting Manifest Destiny every turn.
Yeah.
Yeah, Manifest Destiny is going down. That is, that is what... So, you can make a comparison between Thagrush 2 and Veil 1, in that they both... Veil 1 has a movement shenanigan, and she's gotten sight. She needs to be much more... She needs to be closer. She needs to be within 9 inches of whatever you're killing, and Thagrush only needs to be within 14 of the beast, which, in theory, gives you 19 inches of Manifest Destiny, which is... So he goes farther than her, and she has leash. Their feats are... His feat is a little bit more powerful. Hers is better for retreating things that are not war beasts, but...
Does his feet prevent... can you free-strike beasts when they move on?
Yes, you can.
Okay, so that
In theory, you would kill whatever you connect with.
theories are always nice. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which actually ends up playing out that way a lot with Thagrush, just because Manifest Destiny on 2 Scythian charges is way strong, and it makes math difficult for your opponent's side. People always compare Manifest Destiny to an effective +2/+2, but in reality you skew hard in either direction, and it can actually, depending on how much armor you're going up against, so like if you're at a -3, it's actually effectively more than a +2/+2, at least in theory, because you could have a skew stronger in either direction.
And it also helps.
So.
And it also helps if you, on the occasions when you get like 1 mediocre dice and 1 low dice, the extra dice gives you a chance that you'll have a mediocre and a high dice instead.
Yeah. So.
I was curious. What did you ever use Scourge throughout the day?
Nope. The Spell Martyr was in the support crew, so that if I wanted to have the Scourge option available, I could have it. But honestly, my list is sort of at the point where if a Scythian is going to get to you, or if anything with any killing power is going to get to you, it's going to kill you anyway if you're knocked down or if you're standing up. If I was going against Kane 2, I might have put it in, but Kane 2 has lots of good ways of killing a Spell Martyr. So,
not only that, but he can also hyper reflexes himself.
Yeah, yeah. So if he's not going through stealth, which I guess if he doesn't want to kill the Rake or something. But yeah. So, honestly, it's got limited uses. If the list had Ravagors, and I have tried running this list with Ravagors as like the Ravagors weaken you and then they're actually viable in melee with Manifest Destiny, but I kind of prefer this method, actually, just to have the initial power of the feated Scythians under Manifest Destiny. And I am thinking of changing the list, actually. Oh, in my initial telling you the list, I forgot it has 2 Shredders, too.
Okay. There you go.
So I'm considering taking out the Angelius and a Shredder and adding in a Carnivian, because a Carnivian is an excellent follow-up piece, which is what I often found myself using the Angel for, and it lets me skew my armor on my Scythians up to a 22, which is more powerful against Signar than Tenacity, where that +1 defense does not matter for anything.
That's true.
It's also, as much as the Angel is nice for that one hit, that big armor-piercing attack, I think the Carnivian is going to be more sustained damage over the long run.
And
Oh, the Carnivian does way more. The Angel's got 2 inches more threat, or more than that. Sorry, he's got 2.5 more inches of threat. So
and you just have one Angel in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the other thing too. Angels and pairs are. I mean, I don't want it to sound stupid, but angels and pairs are much better than a single angel.
Yeah. Agreed. I definitely agree. Now, the angel is good for a scalpel, and under Manifest Destiny, it is better at killing single wound infantry than a Scythian is, essentially, because it'll just walk down the line at an effective mat 8. We'll just simplify it that way. and it'll overtake, and nobody knows that angels have overtake because they're used to getting armor pierced. So
nobody knows they have overtake. I agree
I know
with
that. They have overtake because you use it. That's
because I abuse it.
yep.
But so you can surprise people that way. So if I wanted more infantry killing power, I would keep the angel.
I don't know, doesn't it have like a spray or something like that?
Rat bullet.
Yeah, the Carnia has a spray, but
signs importance for your battle group?
No, only melee.
Oh. Only melee. This is not the playtest where I was playing Sprays of Destiny. And it worked on sprays and I was just using it to kill everybody's casters. It's not that. Oh. That was fun.
Yeah.
We can pull that sort of stuff with Bethane and the flying sorceresses, but that's about it.
It sounds like a circus act.
I would pay to not see that.
But Thane actually is a strong matchup against trolls, too. But,
So how many times have you terrorized Dandy with your Runes of War list?
I actually need to buy two or three more units of Rune Shapers before I can terrorize them with Runes of War, which there's...
The Runes of War experience comes from Crucible, where actually, I don't know if he's one of the people doing their podcast now, but in round 5 of the qualifier, I ran into a Runes of War that absolutely crushed me, and I squeaked out a victory with a weird assassination. But I should have lost. So that kind of was like, okay, I need to be ready for this sort of list again, the medium base multi-wound infantry list. And so Thagrush 2 is my answer right now.
Turns out that having direct grievous wounds on daggers is kind of nice for assassination runs.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was nice. And the Hellfire finished off the stupid... stupid. Yeah, Saren. I like Saren. That's why Evale and Saren are in the 2-pair, and Thagrush comes in when 3 lists are available.
Yeah, but the qualifier was a two pair anyway, so you wouldn't have brought the Thagrush.
Yeah. No, yeah, but in a Masters event, I want to be ready for that sort of list. And traditionally, my weakest matchup with that 2-pair was Trolls and Signar. So, in a 3-list pair, I see no reason not to cover that.
Exactly, because you can just count on dodging trolls before that.
Yeah,
I don't know about
trolls.
All that. Trolls are coming back into their own here.
Well, I think the advent of warders and our ability to now spam armor in a way we hadn't. We could spam armor, but it was beast. But to now be able to do the infantry armor spam, is it just you can't. It changes the entire way you have to react to it. Because with a beast, if you can get one set of attacks on one guy, you can take out the beast. But now if you have 8 or 5 warders that have 8 wounds each spread out over the board, that can be a lot harder for a lot of lists to take out.
Oh yeah.
So what did you bring? What did you bring to the event, Brian?
Okay. So I was debating whether I was going to bring my P-Doomy list that me and Andy play tested a few times along the way, and I think is part of the reason he originally hated trolls.
I hate P-Doomy in general.
apparently, he doesn't like his beast getting rampagered.
No.
But I decided that I've been playtesting P. Grissel lately, and I've been using champions and warders primarily with her. And then I was looking, and Chad Schonkweiler had, over at Muse on Minis, had created the so-called Miserable Meat Mountain. Double warders, Mulg, champions, Krillstone. On the feet turn, everything is armor 22 or 23 once it's engaged. And that's potentially up to about 17 or 18 models, combat models, that are at armor 22 or 23. In addition to having hyper aggressive, so if you're getting hit by range attacks, you can send your guys forward. You might actually be able to stop some of the further range attacks if you can engage from the edge of reach. So I just decided I did the same thing as Andy and took somebody else's list and directly net decked, or net listed or whatever. I just felt that it had a little bit more reliable game than P. Grissel. I play tested it 2 or 3 times at our shop on Wednesdays. I think I actually played it against you, Will.
Yeah, I was playing Epic Kruger, and that was miserable. That was terrible. I had to, I feated first turn, which was like tech, but it did not save me in that game.
It got you a point. It got you a dominating point, and then the mountain finally got back, and it was kind of like, wait a minute. So after having played it a couple of times and trying it out, it's kind of funny, but I've come to agree with something that people said. The feet, P. Grissel's or E. Grissel's feet, can seem kind of underwhelming at first, but when you're skewing the armor that hard, when warders only usually taking 1 or 2 damage a pop before they hyper aggressive, that plus two from the unyielding really makes a huge difference, because going from armor 21 to 23 gets nigh unbreakable for a lot of lists. So just decided to directly netlist him, follow that after the playtesting. There's no subtlety to that list. It's a hammer to the face, or several repeated hammers to the face over and over and over.
I mean, how many weapon masters are in that list?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what all I was of thinking.
Them. Yeah. Let's see. There are two units of warders, so PAL 10 base, 12 on battle driven, 13, and then you can give the Krill Stone stone strength. Champs, two attacks, PAL 11 weapon masters. Mulg is Mulg. That doesn't really need any explanation.
Yeah.
And then the Axer, which goes up with stone strength to a PS 15, which is a great infantry clear.
He is.
So 15 weapon masters and Mulg and some other pieces.
Yeah.
Oh, excuse me. 16, because the Fellcaller hero is also a weapon master. Just for
funds.
Hey, it's a great follow-up piece.
It is.
I mean, late game, they're like, oh, you've only got support left. Wait, what?
Yeah.
Weapon master? What? Oh, crap.
It's true. Squire does not hit with weapon masters, that's for sure.
Troll support is not other people's support. That's sort of the common refrain, and it's frighteningly true.
Yeah. But so anyways, let's get into rounds. Do you want to go ahead and start off, Andy?
Sure. Round one, I was up against Colin, who was playing a Magnus 1 tier list that he has decided to test against me every week for like the last 2 months. So I was very familiar with his Magnus 1 list. Essentially, it's the tier. He's got the Protectorate arrow people. What are they called?
You're talking about the...
The Idrian Skirmishers.
Yes, Idrian Skirmishers.
He's got Idrians, he's got two knockdown rocket jacks, he's got a full unit of steelhead cav, he's got a full unit of steelhead halbs, he's got sword and shield jack in the back. Essentially, the theory behind his list, and it does work, is the tier list lets you put down wreck markers, and he hides everything that's important in the wreck markers, and makes it very difficult to hit blurred steelhead halbs or anything like that. And it's an interesting list, but I was very, very, very familiar with it, so I knew exactly what to do. essentially, it was just an attrition fight. I skewed heavily to one side because I went second and started dominating zone, I think. This is all
close
foggy memory.
Close quarters, Andy. It's the one that's got a flag on your side, on the right on your side, that's near that you can dominate for one.
Yeah, I was doing that.
Yeah.
And essentially my whole plan was to force him to use the rockets so that I could use Thagrash any way I felt like. I got a slipstreamed Scythian into the cav and killed three of those, so that was good. And then followed up by another feat, so there was only one cav left at the end of all that. The Idrians were the last to go. He kind of moved the steelhead halbs up the middle to try and provide a main flanking force, and I just whittled them all down. I used the rake to kill a couple key models, although he failed to kill Gorman, which was sad. So I had a knockdown blinded Scythian one turn. And then he was also using snipe on Gorman along with a knockdown rocket to eventually remove a model from the game for a turn, which is a solid strategy, especially when Gorman goes range 10. But yeah, in the end, it was just me wearing him down, and he didn't have anything that could really contest and fight the Angel or Thagrash or the Seraph that I had at the end of the game.
Getting those steelhead cab killed early on was probably really good, because those guys
had... Oh yeah, way important. I was never going to give him a charge, just because the feat allows me to completely shut that down. But yeah, getting an initial on three of them was huge, and then Sign's importance in the feat is really powerful, so just Scythian walked up and killed a fourth one. So
I don't know if you lost the Scythian as a result of that, but honestly, the Scythian for four steelhead cav was probably a pretty fair trade if you did lose it. That was probably a very advantageous trade for you.
It eventually died.
I think he feeded it so that he killed the three and then ran him away.
I thought he said he used the feed.
No. I used the feed offensively on him. Yeah. I did run away some of my models. But that Scythian was so far in the backfield that it didn't really have any threats against it. And so it just killed more calf. It was either that or walk away and get charged by two calf. So I chose to walk forward and kill one.
That's a fairly close trade, about 11 points. Scythian's what, 9 or 10 points?
9. That's a fairly even trade, he didn't actually have a way to kill it either. It eventually ended up dying a turn later after that because it went over and attempted to kill his warjack that's got a sword and a shield that I forget the name of. No, but
So the Steelhead Cav is 10 points for 5 of them.
Oh, was it?
They're 11. Okay. Yeah, most of them are 11, but Steelhead Cav is cheap.
I mean, that's still a pretty good trade for him, especially getting some of his hardest hitting power.
It wasn't a trade. I mean, the Scythian didn't die. It didn't really take much damage either.
Then that's even better. That works out.
Yeah, it was just a theft. I did end up losing both Scythians by the end of the game, but it wasn't the end of the world. I had won the game at that point.
Your Legion, your beasts are expendable anyway.
Well, and then poor Colin, he's been testing this list and tweaking against me every week. I'm not even kidding. Every Wednesday, we play a game, and he messes with his list a little bit. So he did get thrown up against the one person who'd seen his kind of weird list a billion times. So
that's fair. So that's your round one, Brian. Did you want to talk about yours?
Sure. I played Glenwood, one of our local ret players, who we played a few times. And I owe him an apology because I played a little sloppy because of nerves and there was some miscommunication at the beginning. And Glenwood, if you hear this, my apologies for that. He was running an Ossian list that actually, when I saw it, I was a little worried because Ossian, with his range component, can actually crack into armor.
That actually seems like a pretty decent drop. If Ray had to drop something against Meat Mountain, that'd be what I would expect them to drop.
That's probably one of the best that they could drop. I was a little more worried than I expected to be. Because I was looking at it and I hadn't actually ever faced Ossian, especially period. And so not having faced him at all, wasn't really sure of his capabilities. I mean, I knew theoretically, but, and he was loaded up 2 units of Stormfall Archers, which is going to put a serious hole in whatever it hits. I'll go ahead and explain it. Now, there's generally when I had my first turn, I had one of 2 ways of doing it. If I went first, I would put up dash for 1 with Harmonious Exaltation from the Rune Bearer and dump 5 into the stone. Just get the stone loaded up from the very beginning. If I went second, then I would put up dash, put 4 in the stone, and still camp 1 on Gristle and usually Parker behind Mulg, so that Mulg could hide her just to protect her a little bit early on. One went first, did that, and basically it really just came down to jamming him out. I think on my second turn, I ran up in front of his lines, feeded. He started shooting me, or he took his halberdiers into me, beat on me a bit, and I came out minus most of my champions and a couple of warders. But by turn 3, Gristle was dominating on the friendly point, and he could never get a single model to contest. So about 5 turns later, it was over. He technically would have clocked. I think he had about 10 or 11 seconds left on the clock at the end of his last turn, to my 20, 25, something like that. But it was just a jam. There wasn't ever any real nuance to it. I just claimed the point, and I found out that apparently that many warders and champions are still hard even for Ossian to get through. Even with all his shooting, it's still just a lot to break through. The Stormfall Archers are at dice minus 9 or dice minus 12, depending on the circumstance.
They're 12, dice minus 9 or 11. Yeah, they're 12.
So that's just a lot to break through.
And they get 4 dice on Ossian's feet turn?
Yeah.
Yeah.
4 dice, but I also put up Tale of Mists on 1 unit of warders, the unit of warders that was more threatening to him. So they were still needing 7s to hit because they don't ignore concealment.
Yeah,
so,
they don't like hitting things.
So actually trying to hit them was a little bit problematic. I think he missed 1 or 2 of them. He shot up the champions pretty hard. But like I said, when the jam just kind of got to him over time. I had a list, and having gone first, I could get better board position. And close quarters is actually surprisingly susceptible to jam. I've noticed that. If you can get on your friendly point and you can jam the other person, you can win over 5 turns pretty reliably. I think the Mead Mountain does it better than most because of the armor.
Right.
The ultimate jam list.
Yeah, pretty much.
Slow as...
if you actually can jam.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's with speed five warders, you know, they can, and then hyper aggressive, so that if you shoot them and you crack armor, they suddenly move a little bit further up the board. The list gets a little deceptive, actually. It can get across the board deceptively faster than you would expect. So, yeah, 5-0 on control points, and that was my round one.
All right, sounds good. Andy, round two.
All right, round two. I was up against Jeff, and I feel bad for poor Jeff in this one. So Jeff was playing Irisk 2, so he had a full unit of the Winter Guard with Joe, Winter Guard infantry. He had two of the Juggernauts and a full unit of IFP and the Great Bears of killing things under PR. And I think that was it. He had some Chaozzi assassins too. Not assassins, eliminators, the two of them. And Eris too. So, you know, a pretty standard Eris 2 list other than having two Juggernauts. So I went second, I think. I'm trying to think, sorry. Maybe I went first. I don't know. Either way, he moved his Winter Guard up my left and the IFP up my right. Eris went up the right, and then he split the two Juggernauts. There was a forest in the middle, so he essentially went down the forest, and the Great Bears went in the center of the forest. And then he pinged me a little bit. Oh, there were Winter Guard. Not Winter Guard. What are the snipers called?
Widowmakers.
That's it, Widowmakers. So he had some Widowmakers, and he pinged me a little bit, and he actually pinged me and shot my Scythian that had unnatural aggression on it and did one damage,
oh,
which is perfect.
What's unnatural aggression do again?
So on my turn, essentially what I did was killed lots and lots of things. The Scythian advanced and killed the Great Bears because I do not need battle-lusted Great Bears charging anything in my army. They would kill whatever.
That's what they
and
do.
I shifted heavily away from the IFP, but sent the Rake over that general direction to screw with them because Rakes are good at that. And a Rake in a forest with tenacity is difficult to kill. I also sent a Shredder over that direction too. And then on the right side, I sent a Slipstream Scythian into a Juggernaut, which it failed to do anything to, actually. So it missed a bunch. It is defense 12, but even then it failed to kill any systems or do anything. So that was sad. And on the feet move, I moved both Scythians over and hit the Juggernaut some more and still failed to knock out any systems whatsoever.
Turns out Kador Jacks are like iron walls.
I make a motion that 9 Scythian attacks should be able to take out a system. I killed Eris too. I killed a bunch of the IFP. But there were still enough left over to be a credible threat. On his turn, he moved up Irisk. He popped the feet. And he spent all of his focus, which I thought, oh, well, I'll just kill him now.
casual decision.
Because he was way close to all my stuff. But in the end, he actually planned it out really well. The Juggernaut ended up killing the Scythian, no problem, and killing half of the second Scythian, which was sad. And then he committed the rest of the IFP to attacking Angels and Seraphs and the second Scythian. He did not commit enough IFP to kill the Scythian, though, which was good for me. And he didn't do any significant damage to the Angel or the Seraph. So on my turn, I have a Scythian, an Angel, a Seraph sitting very close to Irisk 2, although unable to charge him. Thagrosh went over in that general direction because there was nothing to threat him. The forest in the middle essentially let me move him as far forward as I wanted. I killed the rest of the IFP. I thought I would leap a Rake over and attempt to kill Irisk that way, but there was no reason. I actually found out I can't leap when I can't charge. I did not know that. I should play the Rake more. So after killing everything, the Seraph advanced, and then just because I needed to actually generate some fury to put on a Forsaken so that I could start getting it up to, you know, danger levels, I went ahead and just shot Irisk, needing 10s to hit. And I got 3 shots, and I hit the first one, and so I boosted damage and rolled a 16, needing a hard 10.
So you rolled
damage. Oh, no, my mind was out on the Seraph, and I couldn't fix it, so I boosted to hit. Yeah, this is the dice are really stupid at this point. Yeah. Needed a 10 on 2 dice.
Oh, what the
Got heck? It. Got it.
Of course.
Boosted damage, rolled a 16. So I have a second shot.
Oh, my God.
Boost a hit. Roll a second hard 10. And kill Irisk. So,
and this, listeners, is why we hate Andy's dice.
So.
And this is pretty much part of the course.
I think
this
I definitely could have won that game. I mean, Jeff still had game. He still had the full IFP boat.
Yeah, he sounded like he was doing pretty good.
And I essentially had a Seraph, an Angel, and a mostly dead Scythian, and Irisk, Thagrosh. So I was feeling pretty good about the game, but then the Seraph decided to end it.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter what he's got on the board when you can just roll 10s every time you need them.
I wasn't expecting that to happen. I was going to use it to put Fury on the Forsaken so that the Forsaken could kill IFP, which is a, you know,
likely story.
But instead, the Seraph just decided to kill Irisk. So
the Seraph just decided it was its day.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and on that turn, I also killed the Juggernaut.
Maybe he should be able to partake in his own feat. I mean,
it's a different Irisk.
In my defense, I think I had it anyways, but I might not have. A good IFP CRA in the right place could have caused me some serious problems.
Yeah, I think Irisk 2 is still like a 15-15.
Yeah, no, he can't compete with Thagrosh in the end. With Battlelust, he might be able to kill him.
I mean, he's got Battlelust, but he's like an old man.
I mean, he literally is an old. He's not Nemo old, but he's
kind of old.
I think it's supposed to be in his like 40s or 50s still. I mean,
is Nemo like a time mage? Because it's like his prime version, like the oldest man, and then he gets progressively younger.
Yeah,
it's like apparently. He's got like a date in his third version, right?
No, it's a contract he made with Haley. Haley keeps regressing his age.
Is that what it is?
I think actually, you know, the power pack that Caitlin Finch is carrying around, it's actually sucking her life and sending it back into Nemo.
It probably is.
By the end of the story arc, she's going to be 80 years old and he's going to be 20.
I mean, it's true. Or Finch. Something sucks about Nemo 3.
Yeah. She's definitely, let's not go there.
I wasn't even talking about that. I was just talking about the way it plays.
Mm-hmm.
You're the one that made it dirty.
How is this?
You know, and that I did say I think I could have won, but I should add that Jeff does not make mistakes, and I could have easily lost too.
Yeah, it sounded like he was doing pretty good actually. If you hadn't
assassinated
him, I mean,
it was not killing the Juggernaut. I thought I might have lost there, but so yeah, that game. All right, so
okay, Brian.
Brian's run.
Round 2.
Okay, so I will mention, and I'm going to spoil a little bit. That I started the lineup of the Murderer's Row of the Raleigh area meta, managing to pull in the same day Liam, Tyler, and Andy.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome, actually.
So that turned out to a fun day, but Tyler was my round 2. So
I love that all 3 of them were there to dream crush, because that's like, everybody's qualified, we're just here to crush dreams.
Well,
tournaments are fun. You play in a tournament.
Well, so Chris, before this round, and I somewhere along the way, basically from every round 2 through 5, just as a little tangent here, Chris apologized for the matchups because the computer was rolling mirror matches all over the place and weird, strange matchups occurring.
Uh-huh.
I don't remember what it was in round. I don't remember what it was in round 2, but I know Andy got a Legion mirror match. Somewhere along the day.
Oh, round 3, I got a Legion mirror match.
So I
it
think
was
it was
no,
round
4.
Sorry.
Error. Is yeah. that what the, is that what he told you?
Your mirror match was like what? Round 3, right?
Round 4.
Round
so
4.
We'll get to that,
okay,
but,
we'll get to that because Keith and I have a theory.
I think round 2 was actually circle versus circle, if I recall correctly. But anyway,
let's see. So, I have it all in front of me. I could probably figure this out.
No worries.
Nah, it's fine.
It's not that big of a deal. But
all right, Brian.
So I pulled Tower for round 2. And since I was going to mention this earlier and I didn't get to it, there was one, basically with the Gristle 2 list, there were a couple of things I wanted to avoid. Siege was one of them, which we had a couple of people playing Siege, because he can crack the multi-wound armor, especially on his feet turn, relatively reliably.
Well, it's a little bit harder because which ones have... Do one of them have the defensive line?
There's defensive line. There's the Krill stone.
So those yeah. stack on top of the half armor. So it yeah. does make it harder. It's still kind of hard to crack.
Yeah, but
with all those boxes.
But a lot of the time, especially with some of your bigger shots, you're going to be at dice plus one or two at least already. So you can reliably take a model off the board.
Yeah, but I mean, he really wants to be able to use the pow tens to just reliably kill.
True.
And out and a 8-wound model.
Yeah, that is how his list comes alive, is by yeah. using those Powtans to kill things that they have no business killing.
Exactly.
But on the other
don't
hand...
Don't forget in that matchup that Siege can spend as much focus as he wants to because the threat ranges are extremely predictable.
Well, and that is one thing. There is no subtlety to the Gristle list. And then his Ground Pounder, last thing about Siege before I get to the tower, his Ground Pounder can, like, especially if he gets it on champions or something who tend to be more bunched up, he can theoretically get the entire unit, which could result in possibly 4 lost champs.
When I was playing at Crucible, I think Siege's Ground Pounder killed like almost an entire unit of Gatormans by itself.
Yeah, that's...
And then, you know...
And you can just, like, if he's worried about damage, he can just boost damage on all of them.
Yeah.
But you can probably guess who the other bad matchup, as a general rule, trolls are going to... Or the meat mount is going to feel, which is Krix.
It's right? going to be Krix.
Armor swings are a thing.
Well, luckily for you, I think Tyler's playing Scavarus.
He was.
And he's also playing Blackbeans, which is like, Spirit Chaser.
Spirit Chaser. Yeah. Oh, Pow Tins. Isn't that adorable?
Kind of funny you should say that, actually, but I'll get to that in a moment.
We have Specialist in this tournament. So.
Well,
although I don't know if Tyler actually had any Specialists.
He did.
And he actually made a very good switch out. So Tower was running Scabrous, Deathjack, Death Ripper. He had Black Beans. He had, for most matchups, he had Bane Thralls and then another min unit of something. I can't remember what it was. And he also had Bane Knights in there with Tartarus, because why not?
Did he have a minimum unit of Blood Witches? Was that?
I don't think so, actually, because okay. I think he would have kept them in. His specialist was Crows, which actually is a really interesting one with Scabrous, because they can
where are my Crows at?
Yeah, no kidding, right?
Well, with being able to TK for one cost, he can start spinning my guys around and getting the back arc, which...
Yeah.
And
poison.
Poison. That can actually... It shouldn't kill a warder, but it can definitely put a hurt on. And if you get some spike dice,
doesn't he get a bonus for the backstrike end?
Yeah, that's exactly, yeah.
So, I mean, that's a lot of extra damage that he would get with that TK.
So, in this game, I was going in and I was looking at the Bane Knights immediately and going, oh, crap.
What did he did he switch out and put in?
He switched out Bane Thralls and whatever his other models were. I think it might have been 2 solos actually. That he switched it out for Crows.
He should have switched out probably those Crows for the Black Banes.
Yep.
Actually, I think he made the right call because the Bile Thralls.
Oh yeah,
I'm wrong.
Thralls, I forgot about those.
Entirely wrong unit. That's
yeah.
My
immune Bile to continuous effects too.
Immune to continuous effects. He's not going to damage anything in my list reliably. If he can get one onto the Krill Stone, maybe. But that's a really hard maneuver to pull because the Krill Stone has usually a 10 to 11 inch bubble. So it's
right. Well, it's not just that though. I mean, the Black Banes. It seems like they're gonna be. I mean, I guess you just straight replace them for the Crows. And granted, you're not gonna get a lot of use out of the Bile Thralls, but
I think the Bile Thralls, because the Black Banes at the very least were a good distraction. So diving into it, I can tell you what happened. That he actually. This was a relatively short game, really. He just bolted up the board on one side with the Crows and the Black Banes across the first couple of turns. I went up and I just tried to occupy the middle of the board. The most complicated part was that the Bane Knights and the Warders were doing a weird dance on the right side because I did not want him to get charges on more than 2, maybe 3 of my Warders. I wanted to have some of them alive, and I never had a position where I could even just jam my guys up to deny him charges. So we were doing a really odd, complicated dance over there. I had the Axer right behind so that if he crowded the Bane Knights too much and I lost Warders, the Axer's going to walk up Thresher, need 6s all over the board, and could actually, and reliably can take several Bane Knights off the board, which I felt would leave me in a good position. But I don't really like that the Bane Knights could crack through potentially. But on the left side, he ended up double running the Black Banes across the 2 turns. And trying to get them into my back lines to threaten the Krill Stone, which was actually, in my opinion, a pretty smart move.
Yeah, it's a good plan.
But he crowded the Black Banes in a tight area, which was his big mistake, because Gristle has 2 AoE shots on her gun.
Yep.
Right.
So I ran the Krill Stone over, popped Spirit Chaser, and Gristle walked over, and popped one shot with her Quake gun, so knocked down, I hit six of them in a single shot because he had crowded them, like, they were all
way too close together.
Yes, and he realized his mistake later, I think, or quickly after that. So I was dice minus five on the blast damage, killed all but one, then took a second shot, which was trying to get a little bit of board control, and I think was probably a mistake, should have just camped it, but popped that shot over there and got another one for my trouble, and it left her PAL 12 or her AOE 4 that if they walk through, they get to take a PAL 12.
Right.
I don't
want any part of that.
No, they don't want a part of that. That would have, especially with lacking in corporeal, that's a death sentence to them.
It is.
So, but part of the reason he did that was attempting to bait out Gristle intentionally to get an assassination run with Death Jack. I also popped feet that turn, which is kind of critical to what'll happen. I basically tried to position. I got one warder that jammed up into the crows and engaged six of them, I think, five or six of them, trying to minimize their shooting because I didn't think he was. And I put Tail of Mist on that unit too, so he was going to need, if the Stone Tribe Chronicle was still on the board, he was going to need with TK something. I was effectively defense 18, so he would still need 11s, which is not. That's 50-50 for the TK.
Defense what?
Plus two, they would be, excuse me, defense 8, yeah, defense 18, because, against TK, because concealment, and then engaging penalty.
So it'd be 11s.
Yeah, 11s to hit. Yeah.
11s to hit.
And I know the TKs are only one cost, but I figured that at least gave good odds that he would miss a TK or two. But I did leave Gristle with on a pretty direct line from Death Jack, out of his initial range, but I forgot he could TK Death Jack. But I had Mulligan protected position. He had Gorman in his list too, because that actually becomes critical.
Turns out TKing Gorman is also pretty good.
Well, I don't think he TK'd Gorman, but so on his next turn, he pops feet and starts TKing stuff around. But he made one big error that he realized after he had started activating. He gave five to Death Jack, and he should have given four, because he needed to TK Scabrous up to get the range, because TK is only a range 8, not 10.
Gotcha.
And I had Runebreaker up on Mulg, so he also could not get too close to Mulg. And that where he lost the ability to cast spells.
Gotcha.
So I was actually trying to be careful about that.
Have his Arc Node up there? Arcing.
No, he misplayed it. He admitted he misplayed it. He played it well in most of the other games, and I think he was thinking about being able to Arc stuff onto my warders on the right side, and he got him out of position to affect Gristle, really. But he realized that he had the distance he needed anyway, that he could stay out of Mulk's range, so it wasn't a problem. He TK'd himself, Death Jack, and one warder, because there was a warder that was directly in the charge lane for Death Jack to Gristle.
Yeah.
And then he TK'd, maybe he didn't TK Gorman. No, he TK'd Gristle and turned her around to get back Arc. However, Gristle has hyper aggressive, so when she gets damaged, she would turn around. So that penalty would not.
Well, if he hits her with blind, though, then it's.
But the thing is that the thing for turning around is she gets plus two armor from the feet. Because then she is engaging Death Jack. And that's big, because that takes it from dice minus one to dice minus three. And that swing right there is enough that he's in a lot more trouble. His mistake that he copped to later was that he should have kept one more on Scarus to TK Mulg, because then he could have TK'd him close enough to Gristle so that when Gorman blind bombed, he could have gotten both of them.
Gotcha.
And then protective fit doesn't matter.
Right.
Because I need to roll a hard. It's like tens to hit Death Jack, which, okay, maybe I can do it. Andy does it all the time, but.
Yeah, apparently. And then follows it up with 16s, right?
Well, I mean, it's going to be double five crit slam on.
Yeah, exactly.
Death Jack.
But,
GG.
Basically, he couldn't, but he got the blind on Gristle, so now Death Jack was hitting on not snakes. But he also, I had a champion that was just barely in the way that he felt he had to ghost walk. Because of Mulk's protective fits and because of the champion, he felt he needed to ghost walk to avoid the free strike from the champ. It would have been at dice minus 7, 8, something like that. Is he at armor 19, I think? So
he's armor 19.
Dice minus 8. But spike dice rolls do happen. If I hit the wrong column, if I happen to blow out of the cortex by some lucky chance, that's the game right there. So he felt he had to ghost walk and keep from having that chance, and he had to pay one for the charge. So he got into Gristle, but I had two transfers. Had I not taken the extra shot, she would have been on three transfers instead, which would have been a bit more security. But long story short, Death Jack just couldn't do it. He didn't. At dice minus three, he wasn't able to put enough damage. Mulg actually missed every one of his protective fit attacks, but next turn, Moog scrapped Deathjack with no problem. It wasn't even close.
As Moog does.
Warder got onto Scabrous, and at dice minus, I want to say something like dice minus 6, because I popped Stone Strength, cranked the damage roll 6-6-4 or something like that. 6-6-4, 6-6-5. And then a champion came in on charge and finished Scabrous off.
Yeah.
So I was able to, I was actually able to keep Gristle safe enough, and because of positioning, and because he did forget the TK Moog, I had just enough threat that he couldn't quite get the assassination run to the odds he needed it.
Right. Well, had he kept the one more on Scabrous, well, I guess it would have been about the same, right? Because it would, how much was it for the Ghost Walk? Is it?
Ghost Walk is three. So minus one is two.
That's three more attacks on Gristle.
Did he have,
did he have
a Scarlock?
No, he did not.
Yeah, that would have killed Gristle. I watched it.
The reason
it,
he didn't
was...
have a Scarlock is because he couldn't find his Scarlock. He couldn't find his model.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's terrible.
Yeah. That's terrible.
Because
so, Scarlock's like necessary for that dude.
And so
Tyler was kind of suffering.
So that's the little bit probably overly long, complicated story of how that game went.
But. Yeah.
Just a heads up that it's 7:55, so if we're going to finish this before Will has to go to work, we have to speed it up a bit.
Yep. Well, the other games will
it's
go faster.
Fine, whatever.
The assassination one was just the most complicated.
That's
so.
Whatever. If I need to go to work, I'll get ready and go to work, and that'll just be
okay.
What it is.
Yep. All right.
Round three. So I continued my theme of playing people I play all the time and ran into Lawson, who was playing Kruger 1. I wasn't terribly worried because Kruger 1's feet is only good for killing my, you know, support staff, so, and maybe a shredder. But other than that, his feet's not too scary. He's got, his list has the Wolves of Orboros. It's got a full unit of Blood Trackers. It's got a full unit of the women that stab people and they blow up.
Blood
what are they called? Blood Weavers.
Blood
that's
weavers.
It. He's got character stone robot. What's I'm blanking on everything.
Megalith.
That's it. And he's got a stalker in this list, and no stones. He decided to swap out his stones for something else, which I was thrilled about because then
I
just put Thagrush wherever I wanted them.
Literally, and everybody in the store could hear Andy celebrating when he realized there were no stones on the board.
Oh. I was so happy. And then Lawson realized later
Lawson
that he probably should have left the
stones
in. Essentially, there was a big forest in the map. I went second after winning the dice so that I could seal my, get the big forest. I moved all my stuff up behind the big forest. He jammed the zone. This one was a center 12 by 6, and then there were some other flag stuff in other places. So he jammed the center zone. And then I essentially used his models and Thagrosh 2's clouds to make him invulnerable to assassination, kill a couple of infantry, and I then basically used all my war beasts to just kill infantry. So the Shredders, the Rake, the Afflictor all went in, killed lots of good infantry. He had Wolflord Morag in the list, so I got a Scythian onto Morag and destroyed him, so that was good. And essentially I then moved up next to Megalith and stayed away from the Feral. So his Feral was not able to get any threat ranges on any of my Warbeasts, even with the threat of him having reach. And Megalith, the next turn, essentially attempted to kill a Scythian and failed. Or no, he went for some weird assassination with Cyclone, which I pointed out later wouldn't have worked, but he essentially attempted to throw the Seraph into Thagrosh 2 with Cyclone and then kill me, but I was armor 18 behind a cloud wall with three transfers, I think, maybe just two. Either way, it wasn't there.
And he didn't have his stones!
Yeah. his plan after that was then to trample Megalith forward with reach
says?
And attempt to kill Thagrosh, but
like you got
even
a pair
then,
of stones?
The math just wasn't
yeah,
there.
Yeah, I mean, you need 2 cents.
I think. He's going to get mad at me later if he hears this, but...
Andy, you
we, I think in the
friends.
End we agreed the math wasn't quite there. And then at the end of that turn, he forgot to move Kruger. So Kruger is just sitting next to a lot of stuff.
Hey, guys!
and
what's
then,
up?
And then because, you know, stuff was going on, the Feral ran over and killed some, I think, the Rake, maybe. The Feral killed something. So the following turn, I actually decided to kill Megalith, which gave him enough transfers to survive. So then I decided to kill the Feral, and then I killed Kruger because he didn't have anything to transfer to. So, yeah.
That's the second time between me and Andy Elish that we have killed something and given him killed something and given Kruger extra transfers, because I did it in the game against him too. We need to not do that. That's not a very smart play.
At that point of the game, it didn't matter because I had an easy kill on the Feral, and there was nothing left to kill my War Beasts, so that was good.
So we're up to what round now?
Round three.
Yeah, you're round three.
So this game I'll be much more brief about, honestly, because it was a haze, because as my games with Liam usually are, it was a slugfest that was a seriously grindy game. It was my toughest match of the day. Haha, troll pun.
Yeah. I hear that it was your toughest match from Liam.
So, gist of it is that he was running a Jurgen list, and I've been shot up by the Earthbreaker before. I know to watch out for it, and I made a mistake, and I thought that the Earthbreaker had an AoE 3, not an AoE 4 knockdown. And I positioned accordingly for AoE 3, and that was a mistake. So, somewhere around the bottom of I went first, so it was either the bottom of, probably about the bottom of three, I think, bottom of two or three. Liam saw his opportunity, popped two shots with Jurgen into Gristle, followed that by a full Earthbreaker salvo. One of the Earthbreaker shots was dedicated to the warder that was in front of Gristle, getting both of them knocked down, as well as some screening models. And the Earthbreaker pounded Gristle, and I made two tough checks, which was, I've never done with a caster, ever.
1 in 9.
Yeah. Hey, you know how you can roll cold tens every time you want? Apparently. And then he got a bit of bad dice, unfortunately for him.
I would call that a lot of bad dice.
No, well, I got good dice, and his Nis on 2 and 3 man CRAs, one of which probably should have broken, all failed to break armor. And it was just about bad luck for him. And the problem he ran into was he burned clock, a lot of clock, more than he expected to. But also he thought that this would be the game right there.
Yeah, and probably should have been.
It should have been. I have conceded. I put battle reports on my blog. I have it written in there that Liam should have won this game, and my tough rolls prevented it. That's all that happened. I had about a 30-minute advantage on clock at that point, and I put Gristle, and she never had less than four or five transfers for the game. I hit her behind the forest. I killed the Earthbreaker with Mulg and some support, and then just ground on the clock. That's all there was to it. No CPs scored in the game. I won because of tough rolls. Liam played a great game. He outplayed me. I just got lucky.
Yeah. All right.
So, it happens. Sometimes you need a bit of luck. That's what they say.
That's why your caster has tough.
It worked. It wasn't what I wanted to count on, but it got me through the rounds.
Andy, round four.
As we say,
round four, I ran into John, who is a Legion player he's a very good Legion player from the beach, from Wilmington. And he was running actually a list he had ran against me in the last tournament. So he's running a Rias tier. I don't think it's tier 4, but it might be. Either way, it's got a Typhon and a Ravagor. It's got two full units of War Spears. It had a min unit of Warmongers, as well as the solo that gives +2 to hit. And it had a min unit of Swordsmen with the UA, which I think they get for free.
Are those Warmongers those ones that look like gargoyles?
No, they're the berserking ogres.
Oh, okay.
You will not see grotesques on the table.
I have seen grotesques on the table.
They were played this weekend in somebody's list.
See?
Really?
No, they're sweet models. That's about all I can say for him.
Yeah, he had lost in round one, essentially, I think, because he wrote his list down wrong, which caused him to forfeit a match automatically, so he was kind of bummed out, and I felt bad for him.
What happened?
He forfeited because his list was written down wrong. Points were off or something, and he had to forfeit his round one.
I deploy my guys essentially, and you know, one side of the end on one side of the end on the other. An angel. I was essentially going to use a wall and a forest to protect myself from the initial warmonger charge, and go from there. You know, murder the medium base infantry with my signs important scythians, which they do really, 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 really well. But I did make a very crucial mistake at the start of this game. I put Thagrosh and a Scythian behind one wall, and I put a Scythian and an Angelius behind a forest, you know, past the 3 inches. And I put a Seraph kind of in the backfield and everybody else, you know, spread out in the rear out of threat ranges. But I did not switch my soap. He made the prey for his war spears each Scythian on their correct side. And what I needed to do was switch the Scythian side and then use a slipstream to get them into the correct position. And instead, I just decided to rely on the wall to keep myself alive from the war spears, which was a big mistake, because they not only were able to go far enough, he ran them very far forward as he could go, which makes sense. And so he was able to actually charge past the wall that the Scythian was hiding behind and absolutely murder it. Everything on the other side was perfectly safe because the forest was, you know, a very good way of keeping stuff alive. So essentially I lost a Scythian when I had no business losing a Scythian. But then I was able to retaliate very strongly. Because he advanced so far, I could use Thagrosh, keep him behind a wall, and kill some medium base infantry with him, which is very useful. I popped the feet, and Shredders, actually, under Signs of Importance, are very good at killing medium base infantry, so the two of them went over and killed a couple war spears along with the feet. Everything else ran out engaged. I killed as much as humanly possible, which ended up being almost every war spear, most of the warmongers, but none of the swordsmen, so he still had solid charges. And I did kill Typhon this turn, too, so Typhon never got to do anything. The turn before he had advanced and sprayed a little bit. No, sorry. I'm getting my turns mixed up. Sorry. I did not kill Typhon. Typhon was too far in the backfield. So on his turn, he advances. He uses the swordsman to actually deal a very significant amount of damage to my warbeast with only one or two sitting around without charges because I had used the feat to, you know, advance into kill more stuff and deny charges from the swordsman. So he did actually a significant chunk of damage to my warbeasts. He moved up Typhon. Typhon sprayed and attempted to kill things, but all in all didn't get too much done. The following turn, I used Slipstream to go advance, murder Typhon. Actually, with a Seraph, murdered Typhon. And I'm probably missing a few things. Essentially, the game came down to him with a few swordsmen and Rias. An Angel ended up murdering the Ravagor. And I had Seraph, Angel, and I was holding a zone. And I just cleared the zone and dominated and ended up winning that way. I'm getting everything mixed up. I'm sorry. I could have dominated and won, but instead I put an Angel onto Arias with no transfers and she died. So,
you know, that works too.
She didn't have any transfers because I killed all her war beasts. So, not because she was sitting on zero.
I'm not sure how excited I can get because a Legion player suffered, but a Legion player enjoyed himself at the same time. So it's just not as satisfying.
No,
he got to do some cool stuff. Rias got a charge off on a Scythian and was able to Spirit Eater the Fury away from me and then sprint away.
I approve.
So that happened.
That's cool.
That is
but
awesome.
In the end, I was able to pull it off with my list's very capable medium-based infantry destroying power. But John is a really good Legion player, and you have to watch out when you're playing him.
Yeah, he is.
And I'm just grateful every day that he plays Rias. both of them. The other Legion player that's good from Wilmington really likes playing Kallus. So
yeah,
they're like the opposite of me. But they're good with those casters.
They really are.
The other Legion player, I think his name's, I want to say Anthony, and I'm sorry if I have that wrong.
Yep.
But he
yeah, it's Anthony.
He was the one running Grotesques.
Yes, and he swears by Grotesques.
That's
which I don't.
So weird.
I was a little spreadsheet on the board myself. I didn't play him, but I just got to watch.
Was he playing Kallus?
Yes, he was playing Kallus.
Oh, okay. That makes a little bit of sense.
Yeah.
Anything else does not make any sense.
Well, fair. Brian, with your round four.
So this is the one that Will was very excited about because, again, Chris made his apology for weird matchups, at which point it was me, Matt, and Andy who were undefeated. And we knew it was Trollblood versus Trollblood. Like, that was, as soon as Chris started giggling, that was pretty much a confirmation that it was going to be Meat Mountain versus Meat Mountain.
Uh-huh.
I was thrilled. I don't want to play Meat Mountain.
Differences being that I had Mulg and an Axer for my battle group, whereas he had an Impaler and a Pyre for his battle group. And then he also, he had some differences in the support staff. No Stone Scrub Chronicor. He had Scaldi and a couple of changes there.
Okay.
Basically, going into this game, I was looking at it and I looked and realized exactly what my opponents see when they look across and they're like, really? I have to deal with that pile of guys? And
well, you at least have like tons of weapon masters and stuff like that. Say, like, come on! That's messed up.
But basically, when I'm looking at the scenario, was the one that has two rectangle areas with monoliths in the middle. I can't remember the name of it, but basically I decided that, because I got to go first, that I wanted to try to trigger get him to trigger his feet first, but I wanted to get the charge first. I wanted a position where I could get into his lines, prevent his charges, get him to trigger his feet, and then have a second line that could still charge. And also, I thought Moog could be the difference in this matchup.
I can see that.
Moog's hitting power, I felt, was enough that if I could keep him safe but use him effectively. And to be honest, that's pretty much... I was able to put my game plan right out there.
His battle group seemed like it was a lot weaker than yours for this particular matchup. Because that Pyre plus an Impaler, he's going to be able to shoot far, but it's not going to do the damage he needs.
I could see Pyre plus Moog. I could see putting the Pyre in there. Actually, in my specialist, I had a Pyre troll if I felt that I absolutely needed to switch him out. But because of terrain, I really wanted to be able to give rush to Moog. I felt that was more important because his armor's high, but Moog at PS20 will still do enough that I felt that he would hold up his end. So I basically just followed my game plan. Our warders on each side just kind of danced around each other, trying not to give too much away. I got a couple of charges into him and got positioning to where he could never charge my backline warders. Moog was able to clear his champions out. I got his champions knocked down, got three of them out using my champions at first, denying them the unyielding on his feet turn, and then Moog helped finish it off. And he had some bad dice. I just got up on the attrition game. And that was his... When you're playing that same list against itself, more or less, the person who gets up on attrition has a really good chance because that list is so attrition-based that it can kind of spiral when you're in the mirror match. The person who gets up first can kind of actually ride that out very, very well.
Yeah, once you start winning, you're probably going to keep winning.
Yeah, exactly. So I just attritioned him out. He conceded somewhere along the way because he just simply realized there was no way he could crack Moog. Across the course of the game, he did about 15 damage to Moog, and I kept healing him up with snacking so that he only had like 5 damage on him. So at one point he had no champions, he was missing about half of his warders, and the Impaler and the Pyre were both almost dead. So I just managed to put my game plan in and I just leveraged Moog. That's pretty much what it came down to.
Yeah.
So Keith and I said this was entirely intentional on Chris's part because fuck this double warder bullshit. They're going to face each other.
That's well, right.
I think both me and Matt went in with the same idea, which is there are not many lists that can handle that kind of firepower. In a one list format, the chances that somebody can handle that kind of armor are not very high.
It's really good. I mean, it's not just the fact that it's such a high armor list. It's also that it can output a ton of damage at the same time. So, I mean, it's not like you're sacrificing damage
even
for armor.
Saying Crix is a bad matchup isn't true. The honest bad matchups for you there is, like, the Asphyxiuses and the Denegras.
Yes.
And that's
it.
That's really your bad matchup.
But that's also the common. And there was a bit of metagaming on my part because I know our local community, and we don't have that many Crix players. Hilariously, every one of them showed up, and I pulled one of them. But
but your worst matchup, I would guess, would probably be actually Asphyxius 1.
Out of
Crix, Asphyxius 1 is probably the teetotal worst.
Asphyxius 2.
Denegra 1. Denegra 1.
Gatsby 2, not Gatsby.
Really.
Gatsby
Denegra
1
will crush that
like,
list because no charges.
Generates the biggest armor swing.
Yes, but Gatsby 2 also gets that second round of the charging guys.
He gets the charging guys, but they're both
really nasty. And
because the first one turns anything into a viable threat to kill your army.
True, but I also did have sorcerers. I will say I had sorcerers in my specialist, and just in case we did have Crix players, because I was worried about
the first one also has Scything Touch as well.
Well, but it was more for dealing with the Denegra. That was
Crippling Grasp.
I met it against it as best as I could, and I just hoped, and I got lucky that Scabrous was not the hard matchup out of Crix.
Well, if it was two lists, I don't think that he would have dropped Scabrous against you.
Oh, no, but we were all counting. If it was two lists, I would have probably had something that had a lot lower armor, more guys that could
More single wound.
Yeah. More single wound that's not going to give him the bigger targets. And that's
right.
So, I mean. All right.
So, y'all are both in round five against each other?
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
So,
which,
by this time,
which list did you,
did
you choose against each other?
Well, let's see. I debated going with the Gristle list, but I ultimately decided on the Gristle list.
Oh, is that how it turned out? How about you, Andy? Any real consideration?
Went with Eat the Eggs.
So, hey, you actually
and essentially, used... at this point, yeah. Yeah, we are both exhausted. So Brian's like, Andy, you should forfeit because you've already qualified.
No. I actually offered to ship Captain
Crew. But Chris told me I couldn't do that because that would let me pick people who are going to be in the mace thing, so I couldn't actually forfeit.
Yeah, but you could have diced for it.
I offered that. Andy is lying. I did not say you should concede. I said, actually, what I said is that we could take mutual first and we can play it out on Wednesday. That was my exact offer. And you were actually willing to take me up on it until Chris said no.
Yeah.
I will mention, this was getting to about 9 o'clock. What we thought would be a 3 to 4 round tournament was turning into 5.
Yeah.
And that extra game is just
If Andy had lost his previous round against the pair with the pair down, then you would have only had the 4 rounds,
right? I know, and that was
just
blame Andy for it.
Actually,
I don't want to lose because there's coins.
I don't know why Andy is ever put in that pair down space.
Yeah.
For as many times as I've seen Andy in the pair down, like, hey, it's a pair down. We're going to put Andy there. And
you know,
it's like,
I was the pair down every round.
You
against Lawson, I was a pair down, too.
You know true justice is if he had to face the Meat Mountain, beat the Meat Mountain, then face the Meat Mountain one more time.
Exactly. That would have been
fantastic.
So this game, you ran everything forward, right?
Yeah. I think I went, you won the roll. You let me go first.
Yeah.
I ran everything forward. You ran everything forward. I ran forward and occupied the center.
I ran forward and attempted to kill as much as humanly possible with my feet, which ended up being not very much.
Actually, that's not true. I popped my feet the turn. I popped my feet because I knew that he was going to get the alpha. I just said,
"Oh yeah, crap. Oh yeah, I get the alpha against you." There's no way.
However, I did do one thing I'm very proud of, and mostly just because of the look on your face when you realized that you couldn't use something you couldn't do, which was I put up Rune Breaker on both Gristle and on Mulg. So he tries to use his takedown animus once, and he can't use it because of Runebreaker. He has now lost his animus. And I
was
like,
it
was
sad.
Yes! No takedown.
But so then the stupid warder toughed like 5 times.
Ah!
And it was a warder.
You actually
managed
to kill
the last warder in the friendly zone that I was just going to go ahead and toss Thagrush into to dominate and start, you know, I thought if I'm ever going to win this, I'll just fling my stuff in and I'll start dominating the zone. And the stupid thing toughed a bajillion times, so that failed miserably.
One of them did tough 4 times. However, I will mention that Andy did manage to, managed to kill a battle-driven warder with an afflictor, which was kind of hilarious.
Yeah,
turned into an incubus.
That was good.
I was just going, how is this happening?
Fantastic.
That's funny.
It's not that out of the. It was a damaged warder. The warder had like 3 HP left.
Well, no, you got him on the charge, so he wasn't battle driven the first shot. Actually, so.
If you're using Andy average dice, it's very likely.
Oh yeah,
it's a 14 Andy, on 2 dice. I mean, what's not
Andy,
reasonable?
Exactly. Andy for about 4 or 5 consecutive damage rolls did not roll a dice below a 4. My warder.
Yeah, that was good.
my
good job,
the
Andy.
One that was subtracted.
He actually was one side and managed to kill 3 warders at dice minus 6. So
nice.
I was just sitting there going, how does this?
Because Andy popped his feet.
Duh. and we're not saying Fagrosh popped his feet.
We're saying Andy popped his feet.
Yeah.
He didn't kill as much as he wanted to. I removed 3 heavies the next turn. He
seems like a fair trade.
He tried to kill Mulg with Thagrosh, and Thag's dice crapped out. I'll give poor Thag.
Thagrosh whiffed
4 times. I think
Thagrosh
missed Mulg 2 or 3 times, actually.
Oh
4 times. No, he missed him 4 times.
4? Okay, I just knew. And then Mulg was like, wait, you have no transfers and you're standing within my reach? Yes.
I eat you. It's done.
So, yeah, I think I do actually have game against Meat Mountain. I just need to play it differently.
Well, I also had some bad positioning on my warders. We both were tired and made mistakes that we wouldn't have made. And you were just going for an all-out aggressive, how much can I kill play. That was...
Yeah, it's how fast can I end this game?
there were some mistakes made by both of us that if we weren't so tired, probably wouldn't have been made. So.
Well,
it turns out we could end the game before anybody else did in their round 5.
And
I apologize to the Wilmington guys that had to drive back until like 2 in the morning.
Yeah,
that's rough.
They didn't. The game. I think the last round finished up at 10:30. Me and Andy actually talked Chris into letting us start early, hoping it would finish it faster, but Chris made us stick around to get our prizes. So.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So now Team Dream Crusher needs to start going to other local events and seeing if they can make the person who gets the invitational like fifth place.
Well, now
We only took second, third, and fourth in this one.
Yeah, I know.
Well, we took first two. Hey, give me credit.
No, but you're not on Team Dream Crusher. You weren't qualified yet. Yeah. Now you're on Team Dream Crusher.
Was Liam. I got third, and Tyler got fourth.
We're now going to give other people some bizarre situations because me and Andy have agreed on the next tournament. Now that I am qualified, we get the army swap.
Yep.
Woo! Yeah. So I get to play trolls.
Yeah. And I finally get to play with your meat.
All right. Is that it, gentlemen?
I didn't know if y'all knew this, but at What's a Lock and Load, Brian White won the Invitational for Mace.
And however, because he is going to War Machine Weekend, it was a proud weekend for the trolls. A troll player got the qualifier spot for Mace.
Cool. Nice. Sweet. Also, we didn't know.
Also running E. Gristle. He was riding E. Gristle. So I just found that out on the Troll Bloods forum on Facebook.
Sweet.
Well, so, now my only option is to win GigaCon so I can go to War Machine Weekend because I don't want to play against a bajillion troll players.
What do you think is going to happen when you go to War Machine Weekend?
Oh, you're right. Didn't Chad already qualify? Yeah.
Yes, Chad qualified. Yes, he did. Chad won two.
This is assuming that I win a tournament. I'm probably not going to win, but.
I mean, you could try.
I'm certainly going to try.
Yep. I'll tell you what, Andy. I can give you a scouting report from when I go to Iowa. So. I can give you a scouting report and tell you what he's doing, or I can just let you suffer if you play him.
I mean, he's probably going to win the Meat Mountain. Although, I don't know, the Meat Mountain didn't win the Iron Gauntlet, so obviously
it sure didn't. It was Signar, obviously. Yeah. Well, yeah,
the person who was running the Meat Mountain, Keith Christensen, had it as his alternate list, and he went to Gatsby 2 when he lost. So, he should have just stuck to the Meat Mountain.
Yeah. What do you want?
Sorry, Keith, if you happen to ever listen to this.
All right, so is that it, gentlemen? Because I actually have abandoned poor Jay Lee for a while. All right,
okay.
I'm going to sign off.
Sounds
Sayonara.
Good.
Sayonara.
See you on Wednesday, Thanks. Andy.
See you later.
See you Wednesday.
All right. Well, I think that's about all we've got, so we're going to sign out. This has been the Gun Bunnies.
This is the Gun Bunnies signing out. This has been Will.
Okay. This is Brian. Thanks for having me.
And Keith.
All right.
No one. It's probably about an hour 15, maybe. And you can probably, and that's including.
Jesus Christ! I warned you!
So we better not risk another frontal assault. That rabbit's dynamite!